Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, in studio today with Frank Holloman of the Southern Environmental Law Center. And joining us by phone today, Jeff Brooks, spokesman for Duke Energy. We're talking about coal ash management in the state, how it might be regulated, what the public needs to know, and why all 14 of Duke's coal-fired facilities are facing legal action and how they're responding. If you have a question about coal ash management, we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call, 910-343-1138. You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us using coastlinehqr. Frank Holloman, you were just telling us about this most recent notice of intent regarding the Cape Fear plant in Moncure. Your impending suit concerning that plant alleges a number of seeps, polluted substances, escaping their confines, I'm assuming, and finding their way into a tributary that leads into the Cape Fear River. What kind of seeps are you alleging?
Well, these are very serious flows, illegal flows of unpermitted discharges of coal ash water from these lagoons that contain toxic substances like arsenic and boron, aluminum, and other heavy metals. And the situation, as you say, is so serious. Duke is being sued for, currently being sued by the state for its practices at Cape Fear. There's a federal criminal grand jury investigating the activities of Duke and its coal ash storage everywhere, including Cape Fear. And the state agency has cited them for specific violations there. In fact, this past year, Duke illegally pumped 61 million gallons of coal ash polluted water into the Cape Fear River. That's over twice as much as came out of Dan River when it broke. And at the same time, the dam cracked at Cape Fear. So this is a very dangerous, very serious situation for everybody who lives along the Cape Fear River.
Now, Jeff Brooks, Duke takes issue with the assertion that that 61 million gallons that Frank is alluding to was an illegal pumping. Is that the case?
Yes. You know, and I think we do differ in our perspectives on this. We believe that the work that was conducted, first of all, that work that was conducted at the site, that was a repair work that needed to be done there at the site that resulted in the need to lower the water in one of the basins, or in two of the basins there, to conduct that repair work safely. And the water that was removed from the basin was placed back into the same outfall area where water normally discharges from the basins, and that water is the same type of water that normally is discharged from the basin. So it's water that is at the end of the treatment process. It's not water that came from the plant. It's coming straight from the plant. It's gone through the multi-stage treatment process that those basins are designed to perform. When it leaves there, it then is discharged into an effluent canal there, which is actually part of the plant. It's part of the system at the plant, where it then travels several miles down to another discharge point, and that's the point where it meets the waters of the public waters there. And so at all those spots where that water was removed there at the basin and at the discharge point, there are requirements to measure that, and that's permitted. And so we believe that all of that is covered under the permits that we have for those basins. We also made our work plan available to the state late last summer, so there was ample time to be aware of the work that was being done there. They've been on the site many times to see the equipment there. So this was not something that was done during the dark hours or very quickly. This was done very openly and very transparently as part of a necessary repair job that was needed at the site to ensure continued function there.
As you suggest, Jeff, this was over the course of several months.
That's right.
When the Division of Water Resources discovered it, when they were issuing the violation, they said that pumping far exceeded what would reasonably be considered routine maintenance.
And again, we believe that the work that was done there, the repair work that needed to be done there, was discovered during a routine inspection. It was necessary work that needed to be conducted, and it was important to do that work to ensure the long-term operation of that treatment facility there. Now, the other thing that was brought up was, I think Frank mentioned, I think he used the term crack. We did have a small gap that formed there in the interior wall of the basin. It was a superficial gap that occurred there during some of the work that was being done there. We discovered it. That was a superficial gap that had no impact on the structural integrity of the basin. It was actually part of a turnaround area that had been extended there, and we immediately worked to repair that and to put a plan in place, and have worked with the state to complete those repairs. So again, it's different perceptions that are created, but we believe that we are working under our permit effectively, and we continue to maintain that throughout.
We have Eddie from Wilmington on the line. Eddie, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. What's your question?
Hey, thank you for taking my call. It's really more of a comment, and I'm one of a number of physicians in Wilmington who has been involved over the last few years opposing the Titan Cement plant, and I applaud Duke Energy and other electric facilities for converting to natural gas and really trying to make some improvements in their environmental impact. But as we are moving away from coal-fired electric utilities, why is Wilmington, and when I say Wilmington, I mean particularly our local politicians and leaders, business leaders, and people at the state level, why are we considering bringing in another large coal-burning industrial facility in an area that already has impaired air quality? So it looks like we take one step forward and one step back.
And, Eddie,
and I think our local people need to really look at this.
Eddie, you raise an interesting point. Thanks so much for your call. Eddie is referring to a Titan Cement plant that is slated for construction in New Hanover County, and there has been a very active movement to stop that plant. But getting back to coal ash management in the state, Jeff Brooks, Duke's position on cleanup has been that it takes some serious engineering studies of each individual site to develop the most effective long-term plan. The Southern Environmental Law Center, Frank, claims that that's not the case, and we're talking about 1950s science here. Jeff, can you first of all tell us why the Sutton plant, for instance, is complicated?
Well, I think every plant has its own story, and every plant deserves the opportunity to have a plan developed that's tailored to that plant. If you think about it, we have 33 ash basins across the state, and there's about 102 million tons of coal ash in those basins. So it's a sizable amount. We acknowledge that. And as we look at the basins across our system, we see a lot of different evolutions. We have some that are newer that have sort of the traditional pond look that you might see. We have some that have been allowed to dewater or dry out over the years, and those may look anything from more of a sandy consistency to having grass and shrubs growing on them. And then we have some in their later evolution, some of our older basins that have full vibrant forests growing on them, so and wildlife living in them. We have a heron rookery at one of our sites. We have other things that have to be thought about in the process of closing those basins. We cannot simply go in with kind of a one-size, quick address plan, dig everything out without fully understanding what the impacts of those operations will be. So that's going to take engineering studies. It's going to take groundwater monitoring. It's going to take all kinds of data that we want to do the right science so that we can address this problem proactively and do it in the right way. We're not saying we don't want to address it. We absolutely want to address it, but we want to do it with the right science and the right plan for each site.
Frank Holloman of the Southern Environmental Law Center, you've said that it's a simple process of just scooping out and carting it away.
Yes, this is an example of Duke's four corners defense. In other words, they're just passing the ball back and forth. They're saying we've got to have more studies. We've just been operating these facilities for decades. We don't yet understand them. We don't understand our own coal ash. We got to figure out what to do. And really, this is part of a strategy to try to push this decision as far away from the Dan River spill as possible, hoping the public will lose interest and they won't be required to do the right thing. The truth is that as we are speaking here today, just across the border in South Carolina, in Horry County, where Myrtle Beach is located, coal ash is being moved out of lagoons to safe, dry storage in line facilities and is being used to make concrete. Right across the line in South Carolina near Columbia, the same thing is happening. Yet Duke Energy, the richest utility in America, says they cannot yet figure out how to dig, haul, and put this coal ash, take it out of these unlined lagoons, and put it in line storage. This is just simply a strategy, and it's not fact. In South Carolina, it's happening. I got to believe people in North Carolina are as smart as the people in South Carolina, and that Duke Energy's engineers are every bit as capable as the South Carolina engineers are, and one of these sites is probably more than one-third empty already.
Jeff Brooks?
Well, I think it's important to understand that the South Carolina sites contain an amount of coal ash that's about the size of one of our plants. So it's a fraction of what we're dealing with here. And in that situation, they found a solution that met their needs and worked through that solution with the state. As we look at our situation, again, we have to look at a lot of things that not just, you know, we can even if we decided we wanted to remove all the ash at all of our sites, where do we take it? What do we do with it? Where do we get permits? How does that happen? You know, we run into the issue of not in my backyard. I don't want that stored in my landfill in my community, or I don't want that put in my structural project. You know, these things take time. We have to figure this out. You know, we have used coal ash in concrete. We use about 600,000 tons, as I recall, last year that went into concrete. Much of what we produced at some of our newer sites. We've used it there in Wilmington, in structural fill on the bypass there in Wilmington. We've used it in a lot of applications, and we are very, very open to exploring other opportunities for how we can use that coal ash. But, you know, it's interesting, even during the hearings that we held here in Raleigh, we heard legislators beginning to kind of innovate in their thinking of, well, what if we did this? Well, what if we did that? The same thing is going on with our engineers. We're trying to figure out what the best solution is. Some of those technologies are ready for market today. Some of those are coming along at a very rapid pace. If we rush to market with this, if we go with one plan that doesn't account for the potentials we could do, I think we could really miss creative opportunities for how we use this and do it in a way that benefits the community and addresses the concern Frank's talking about as well.
Frank Holloman.
Rachel, if I could say one thing in response to this. Because of this waiting, we had the Dan River spill, and all those communities were harmed. While Duke is talking and spinning and studying, there are 14 communities in this state and 14 rivers that are at risk of another catastrophe. There are 14 catastrophes waiting to happen. We can't sit around while Duke Energy tries to figure out reasons for delay. It is urgent that this problem be solved now, and we know the solution. It's just a matter of implementing it and stop coming up with excuses for why we can't do anything. As of today, Duke Energy hasn't started cleaning up any sites.
You're listening to Coastline. We're learning about coal ash today, why the management of it has grabbed national headlines, and how state leaders might regulate it. We'd like to hear from you. If you're following the coal ash conversation, if there are elements to this discussion you keep hearing about and you don't understand, you're probably not alone. We'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 343-1138. You can send an email to coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us using coastlinehqr. Jeff Brooks, there are three general approaches to decommissioning coal ash basins. Is that correct?
That's right. They tend to fall in about three categories. Those would be you can excavate, as has been mentioned some today, and that would involve literally removing the coal ash from a basin and either transporting it to a lined landfill or a lined structural fill or other type of project that's allowed. You also theoretically could remove it and then convert an existing basin to a lined basin and put it back in there. Then you've got a beneficial reuse. When we talk about beneficial reuse, we're talking about using it in an application such as structural fill. Frank mentioned, you know, excavating basins. We've already excavated a large percentage of one of our basins at the Asheville plant that is actually being used in the Asheville airport for fill projects, or the material that's coming from the Asheville plant, I should rather say, that is being used in structural fill projects at the airport there. And that's an example of an innovative way you could do that. We've got concrete applications. One of the things we've heard a lot during this debate is concrete. How can you use the coal ash? Coal ash makes concrete stronger. It stabilizes it there in the concrete, and it's a great use of it. One of the challenges we have is that a lot of the coal ash that we produce and that would be in our basins has excess amounts of carbon or other impurities that would have to be processed out to be able to use it. But it's an example of a way you could do it. And then the third option would be to cap that material and leave it there in place using a process that permanently closes that basin and maintains groundwater monitoring around the basin, allowing you to store it there. So there's lots of different options that you could explore, and no one solution is right for all the basins. We have to look at each site. We have to look individually at what the best options are for that site, and we need the time to be able to do the science to make sure we're making the right solutions. We want to resolve this problem, and it's a national issue. There's 650 basins nationwide that are looking at this. We're not the only utility dealing with this, but we have an opportunity to address this in a smart way that can send a signal to the nation that we're being responsible, and we believe that means doing the science and making the right choices for each site.
We have an email from a listener. Jane asks, and the timing of this is apropos, what danger exists from large piles of coal ash during a hurricane or any weather event with strong winds in the area?
That is exactly what we warn about, and I've got my fingers crossed right now with the a tropical storm heading our way. We're always worried that we're going to have an earthquake, a flood, a tropical storm, or a hurricane that will cause a problem. Duke has had a number of dam failures over the years. The Dan River one was just the most severe. But what's so instructive about the Dan River failure, it failed on a good day. Weather was fine. The Duke system failed and collapsed without a hurricane, without an earthquake, without a tropical storm. Well, if one of these sites, these aging, leaking, failing dams, such as Cape Fear, which is rated as poor quality, which is some of the poorest quality dams in the state and in the region, if it gets hit by a strong storm, I fear what will happen to the Cape Fear River.
And Jeff Brooks, this is something, how would you answer that for the Sutton plant? Because wasn't there a breach of the coal ash basin several years ago, and it was storm-related? The area got so saturated with rain that some of the basins overflowed?
Well, first of all, I do want to address one point. The Dan River incident was an unfortunate accident, but it did not involve a dam failure. It involved the failure of a storm pipe, and the dam functioned exactly as it was designed and worked. We inspected that site even just a few days prior to the incident. So, you can say it's a sunny day event, but it was not a function of the dam itself. Now, when we think about the other sites, when we think about Sutton, you have to remember, too, how many storms Sutton has been through with no issues. You know, we've had Hurricane Fran. We've had other incidents that have come through there. We inspect our basins on a regular basis, and inspections are conducted after 2 inches of rain in a 24-hour period. So we do those inspections immediately following the type of weather that could happen in a tropical storm. And we don't know what the storm path will be here, but absolutely we're on alert watching for that. But at Sutton, you know, I think the incident you're referring to is we did have a small amount of water that spilled over into an area around that basin, but not near a water source or not near anything that ever put the public at any risk. But it was captured there on site and addressed. It never left the site there. But even then, steps were taken to address that afterward to improve that process. So, you know, we do take an active, caring approach to this. This is something that we absolutely care about, and we recognize our responsibility to keep water systems safe. It's important to remember, drinking water was never compromised during the Dan River event, and we addressed and worked very closely with the cities along the river immediately after the event to ensure that that remained safe throughout.
Okay, thanks for that, Jeff. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. Today we're talking about coal ash. Why has it grabbed the national spotlight? How are we handling it? We're taking your calls at 343-1138. You can send emails to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. This is Coastline.